You're listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
Okay, this is Jim Walker, and I am here with Charlie Sutphin and Maddie Walsh, and we are talking about a new retrospective exhibit that is from the Catherine B. Sutphin collection of the works of Catherine B. Sutphin. This retrospective will be at the Harrison Center Gallery opening September 1st. This is a passion project because of your relationship with the artist.
My sister passed away about 8, almost 9 years ago, and her work has been it's moved. It's navigated from New York City to Paris, Kentucky, to Lexington, to a warehouse in Indianapolis, to my basement.
Yeah.
And finally, it's making its way to the gallery of the Harrison Center. So it's had a long migration.
And this is a family connection with the two of you as well. So Maddie, tell us about your relationship to Charlie.
Sure. So I've known Charlie for the better part of almost 30 years now. Sarah, his daughter, has been my best friend since I was 6. So I knew Katie as well. I have pretty fond memories of riding her horses in Kentucky and seeing her with various animals at family functions.
Yeah.
But I also worked as a writing fellow at the Harrison Center last year. So Charlie tapped me for this project when he and Joanna decided to begin the process. So now we're bringing it back to life and hoping that we can honor Katie's legacy with these works.
And you're also Charlie's
daughter. Yes, Charlie's daughter-in-law.
Right.
Yes.
So that there's so many layers of reasons to make this happen and to bring this art back to our city. And in some cases, the first time it's been displayed in Indianapolis. Is that true?
Well, gee whiz. I suppose Katie she was part of the Indianapolis art scene. Mm-hmm. Maddie, you might know better than I.
I don't know specifics about dates, but I know her work has been shown in the Fort Wayne Art Museum at the IMA and a few galleries here.
Absolutely. Editions Limited, I think. And right. So her work has definitely been displayed here, but she took her show on the road. She moved to New York City, 1977, 1978?
Yes.
What do you
think? She graduated from CalArts in 1976 and then moved to New York.
So then a lot of her work would have been made or shown in those cities too?
Yes. Not that we have record of, but I believe she likely was in some student shows at least.
Mm-hmm. You mean in California?
Yes. In California and then in New York too, right?
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Quite a few galleries in New York.
She was in quite a few galleries in New York and also...
in Sarajevo, in Italy.
Bologna?
Yes.
She was at the... So she was at the Ted Greenwald Gallery. She was in the Winthrop Gallery. She was in the Paul Mellon Museum. She was in the... can't pronounce it, in Bologna. And she was also in the Sarajevo Museum during the 14th Winter Olympics.
Yes.
Wow. And so she was a lifelong artist and primarily worked as a painter. Can you describe a little bit? We were looking at the book that you put together for the retrospective, and it shows a lot of range in terms of work, but it feels like it's very connected. It's not like it just goes from here way over to here.
Sure. So her style evolved quite dramatically throughout her career. But I'd say most of the work we're showing in this exhibition is neo-expressionist work. So that would have been in style around the late 70s, early 80s. It's a revival of the Expressionist movement. But what you'll find is a lot of emotion and chaotic brushstrokes that portray kind of realistic subjects that are imbued with the artist's feelings while painting.
Mm-hmm. Would that, so if you're thinking about somebody who would be really well known to people, would that be like Francis Bacon and that kind of?
Yeah, Francis Bacon. Some people even put Basquiat and Keith Haring in that genre. If you think of expressionism, you'll think of Edvard Munch, people like that, and a revival of those same ideas.
And there's a bit of mixed media to some of the work too.
Yes, she practiced in a number of mediums, watercolor, Copic marker, batiks, and her bread and butter tended to be oils and acrylics.
And a lot of the subject matter, especially some of the work that we see later, is related to some of the passions that she had in her life, like for animals?
Yeah, it's interesting the way that works. The work, if you come to the show, if you come to the retrospective, the works that are going to just jump right out are very large canvases. 6 feet, Maddie? 8 feet?
6 to 10 feet, yes.
Large neo-expressionist canvases. The coloration is just so startling. The coloration will... you'll be impressed. You'll be mesmerized by the coloration. But later on in her life, she developed true proficiency, which she always had. But she started to leave the neo-expressionist work and started to be more, I guess, impressionistic, more traditional with the animals. Her love of animals came through. There's this wonderful piece called Dinosaur, and it's her one of her favorite dogs was a Borzoi, a Russian wolfhound, and that's memorialized. And Mona Lola, her dog who used to go into classes with her at Cal Arts, is memorialized. And then she's got all these polo and horse paintings and cat paintings. So it's really two almost different artists. And when you see that, you're going to say, how can these be the same people?
Was it something to do with what was going on in her life too? Is that part of it, or where she was living, or what do you think was going on that contributed to the shift just from what you know of her and her life?
Yeah, that's really good. And I growl because that's inside baseball. But to a certain extent, it was New York City. And it was Tribeca. It was Soho. She started out in Tribeca in the late 70s. And then she was in the heart of sort of the New York City art scene in the 1980s, which was a really cool place to be. It wasn't Paris in the 1920s. But it was certainly not a gentrified like it was now. So that was the zeitgeist of Soho in that time period. So she was sucking up all kinds of influences, and she was young, and I think she was at her creative best, but she still had she was an incredible artist. And so the artistry began to show itself in this proficiency that you see where she starts to leave the neo-expressionism. And she also becomes much more marketable. And so her love of animals, yeah, sure, she segued from this wild, surrealistic, chaotic explosion of creativity to then becoming more of a proficient artist and giving the people what they want, which was polo scenes and horse races and dogs and cats and portraits and things like that. Maddie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think she was probably deeply influenced by what was going on in New York in the 70s and 80s. She has a lot of darker work from that time period, which probably speaks to, I don't know what I would call them, the silent terrors that were going on all around her, like the Cold War and the AIDS crisis, things like this. You can see little symbols throughout some of the work during this period that you might not initially see if you're just looking at the work at face value. that point to these kinds of things. And she was also running in artistic circles that were very experimental. She was friends with people like Maris Cunningham, a choreographer, and Namjoon Paik, who was the father of video art. So I think she would have gotten a lot of inspiration from those types of people.
And one of the pieces we were talking about a little bit ago before we started recording was the one where you can see her reflection in this, or her image kind of juxtaposed with the subway graffiti. And that's really when people think of New York at that period of time. And a lot of times it's that is iconic for what you experienced.
Yeah, yeah. It was so much fun. I don't want to digress into my own personal story, but, you know, I was like 15, 16 years old, bopping around New York City by myself, Times Square, Grand Central Station, Port Authority. And I was just telling Maddie on the way over here, you know, if you blended in, which I did, and Katie did, if you blended in to the landscape, it wasn't a problem, right? It was like, if you looked like you weren't part of it, then maybe, I don't know.
Right.
You know, maybe it's an issue, but when you're just blending in. So, again, the subway, I'm showing you this picture here, Jim.
Right.
That's what the subway looked like.
Right.
And you can see Katie as a ghost figure.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's sort of blending in to her chaotic environment. The thing about this picture, and again, I would encourage your listeners to come and see for themselves,
for sure,
is that it's really big. So you can't appreciate, I mean, you can see it, but it's 65 inches is five times 12 is, so it's over 5 feet.
Right.
So that's big.
Yeah.
And of course the little strange man, and are there some other symbols there, Mad?
Yeah, you can see a face. You can see someone's graffitied high in the corner.
And I kind of, you know, I don't know what this.
I know, it looks like a horseshoe. Almost.
I know, it looks like a horseshoe, and it almost kind of looks like a horse head there, you know?
Oh, yeah, it does.
So that's another aspect of some of these is, you know, you've got to have, you don't have to, but it helps to have an understanding of art. So you don't want to be, I mean, you can be whoever you are, but you don't necessarily want to be the person who looks at it and says, well, what does it mean?
Right.
Because it means what it means. I mean, it is what it is. And there are layers of meaning, but, you know, right? It doesn't come with an encyclopedia. It doesn't come with a set of instructions. So the meaning pours from the canvas to your head,
right,
and it's up to you to interpret quote unquote meaning, you know, as you will.
Right.
But these paintings are evocative.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is, in a way, your sister's still talking to you a little bit through the work when you've been living with this work, both of you, a lot more lately than even before. You had it in your basement and all this, but then you've been working with it as a team, putting it together with the crew at the Harrison Center. How has that experience been for you?
Not fun.
Yeah.
It's been a little hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will kid you not. This has not been a labor of love.
Yeah.
I mean, I've enjoyed doing it, but it's just so freaking emotional. And it's been hard on me, and I'll be glad when it's over. Because it's been a load. But Maddie, you haven't had the emotional.
Right. For me, it was exciting because I knew Katie as a person, but I didn't know her as an artist.
Right.
So I've really gotten to know her, what she was about through her work. That's been a dimension that I just had never been able to explore before, and I think it'd be really exciting for everyone else to see her living legacy.
That's because she really passed young.
I think she passed away. She passed away at 59.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing, Jim, now that you've brought it up.
Yeah.
How old are you, if I may?
55.
Yeah, 55. it's interesting, when my sister died, because she was always 4 years older than I, mm-hmm. when she died, it seemed like she was old. Mm. But now that my sorry ass is 60, now that I'm 64,
yeah.
In my opinion, you can only appreciate age once you're there. Right. So when you're 55 and somebody dies at 59, it's hard to understand. When you're 64 and somebody dies at 59, you're like, I won't say the F word, but you're like, can I say the F word?
No.
Okay. You're like, oh, F. She died at 59.
Yeah.
And you realize, so yeah, you're right, man. She died young.
Because she was making a lot of this work right around that time, I would assume, or near that time.
She wasn't, actually.
So she had finished most of this?
She stopped practicing art around the time she left New York, just before the 2000s, I believe.
Okay.
She bought a horse farm in Paris, Kentucky, and then shifted her focus to raising and breeding thoroughbred horses.
So when you went to, you would have seen the work around still in the home or not? Or did she put it away at that point?
I think she had put most of it away in storage, given it to friends, sold it at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. So much is lost. Mm-hmm. And by lost, I mean, I don't know where it is.
Right.
And we have pictures of it. But that's an interesting story, you know? She left New York City circa 1999, 2000, moved to Paris, Kentucky in 2001, and that was it. And so, no, the art, especially the good stuff, really disappeared. The polo and the animals and the horses. You know, those are on people's walls and are, you know, you run into those. Mm-hmm. But the more interesting things just kind of disappeared because mm-hmm. they're so large, they're so big. But fortunately, we still have them.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Maddie, when you were beginning to think about as a curator how to put everything together to tell a story, what was kind of a way that you decided to frame this?
It was very difficult, I'm not going to lie. I started by just piecing them together. Plants, animals, horse races, polo matches, and then all of the neo-expressionist work. And then once we got everything together, put it all out in a room, I decided to group things more within their mediums and then subgroup them even further to, is this darker imagery? Is this horse or polo related? Things of that sort. So I think if you visit the retrospective in person, you'll find a fairly cohesive story of what Katie was painting when throughout her career as an artist.
Is it linear or is it more thematic or stylistic, the way you kind of put things together?
I would say more stylistic, and a lot of that's due to the fact that we can't precisely date mm-hmm. everything. We know what she was doing basically during the 70s and 80s, but we can't say this was done in 78, etc.
Well, and I noticed the date range in there. Was that also, I know that sometimes when people are working on things, they don't stop till later, right?
Right. So the date range is my best intuition based on her surviving friends I've talked to, when she graduated, when certain shows were. So I think we've placed them where they belong in time, roughly.
Did either of you ever see, I'm assuming that you did at least, Charlie, her studio?
Her studio was a wonderland. And anybody and everybody who visited her studio remembers it. Mm-hmm. It's not something you forget. You can, ask Cousin Sam. It's so... That's not helping. Her studio, the one on Broome Street, was, it's a loft mm-hmm. of gigantic proportion. It was. You could have probably put two full-court basketball
wow.
two, maybe three. I don't know. And, you know, there's not a basketball player in the world who could have touched that ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ceiling, I don't know. It's been so long, but 20 feet, yeah. Right? Could they be 20 feet
yeah.
ceilings?
Sure.
The ceilings were, and it was a wonderland. It was just a wonderland. So there would be this one area, which I would say was livable, and that included the kitchen and a living area.
Yeah.
So there was one area that was livable, and the rest was just like a gigantic bomb went off. And of creativity.
Right.
And oh my God, there were canvases everywhere and stuff. Like, remember, Maddie, when we found, for instance, that giant whale backbone, you know, the whale, I mean, and quiche, or just found objects.
Mm-hmm.
It was it wasn't a junkyard, but there was an awful lot of junk in there.
Yeah.
It was a wonderland. You would just walk in there and you would just be amazed. Now, if you were like somebody who liked neatness, you'd like just freak the, you'd freak the poop out because,
right.
But it was really emblematic of what was going on inside, inside her persona, which was just, energy and color. That's another thing that we should talk about at some point, which is the coloration, but we can,
Let's talk about that. So some of this, I think I read somewhere about, her in kind of being very inventive with even the colors that she used and made some of those or combined to make these pretty distinctive colors.
Yeah, I can't speak too much to that beyond just she was not afraid to use color.
Yeah.
I haven't heard much about her preparation of colors. I know she was, I don't know what word I would use for this. I don't know, Charlie, can you speak to it?
Well, no, but I can speak to coloration because I brought it up.
Yeah.
But what one of the side notes here is the fact that she consistently experimented with all kinds of mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
mm-hmm.
I mean, she was always bopping from one thing to another, and it was sort of like maddening. It's like, Katie, just okay, just chill, but she was always looking for different ways of expressing that artistic nature. But for instance, Laughing Man, if you look at that,
mm-hmm.
that canvas is 74 inches, so that's 6 times 7 is, I'm pretty sure it's 72. I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
So this is over 6 feet tall.
Yep.
And you can see the coloration in the, it's just an explosion of color. I call it Alfred the Laughing Man.
Yes.
Because I think it looks like Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
So you have red and like a sort of a turquoise and a really bold other kinds of blues and greens and yellows.
It's an amazing work when you see it.
Yeah.
Another example of not only coloration, but of, it's kinetic. But is it kinesis? Right. So, right. Is kinetic energy an example of kinesis?
Yeah, like with movement. And
yeah. But is that how
the energy of movement?
You think that's how you
basically?
Say it?
I think so.
Because everybody knows kinetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people don't use the word
kinesis.
Kinesis. There you go.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's kinesis. So, and the kinesis, the kinetic energy, is obviously so alive in the horse racing
mm-hmm.
and the polo. but it's also incredible in terms of Dancing Girl, I call it. This piece here, which is an example of both this incredible kind of coloration, but also it's like Shiva. It's like the multi, you can see, and can you see her face there?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And all these lines, and again, it's 63 by 68 inches, so it's this enormous canvas. And so, folks, you got to come down and see.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you stand in front of it, it looks like she's, you know, I mean, it's two-dimensional, right? It's not, but you can, it's just these lines coming to life.
Right, and the depth that's kind of created by how they're on top of each other and more bright. The brighter the color, the more it's kind of out in the front.
Yeah, right? It's a nice technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's this combination of coloration and movement.
Right, absolutely. Were there some others in here, Maddie, that jumped out at you that you wanted to talk about?
Sure. I know Charlie is a big fan of Bestiary, as am I. It's this one. Do you say it reminds you of a cassock?
Mm-hmm.
I love this one because it's a little bit unfinished, if you can see here.
Yeah.
To me, it just seems like she had this great idea in her head and she had to get it immediately on the canvas. And it speaks to that same movement we were just talking about and just the infusion of colors, my goodness.
And tell us what's in, there's some representation in it. So what would you see if you were looking at it?
So there's a jaguar featured, and then it looks like a man riding a horse who might be a Native American chief. I don't know if Charlie can speak to the influence that might have caused this.
We think it might be Delacroix.
Oh, is it?
Mm. Well, no, but it's like a Delacroix.
Okay.
It's those, I think I'm doing it right, the famous Delacroix where he's on the horse and it's rearing up, and I don't know the jaguar on the back. Yeah. It's almost like like they've coming back from a hunt. I mean, this is like 18th century. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, no, 16th, 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
Portrayal of a man riding a horse with a leopard on the back.
But it's in a. But the background is otherworldly.
Yes.
It's not a real like a representational realism kind of background. It's a whole other world of like swirls of color and things.
It's neo-expressionist.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So there's a lot of those kind of collisions, and that's where you're getting the surrealism you mentioned before. Is these things are kind of far apart and put together in this place.
And then its companion piece would be Earth and Horses. And this piece, the photograph in the book doesn't do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
It's right, that's right. It's evocative of cave art. So she had this whole cave art theme, which you see in a variety of different paintings. So right, you know, so there we are, right? We're going from the New York City subway to 16th century bestiary to cave art, which, you know, it's just, I mean, that's like the expanse of human civilization. And so on this one, you can you see this lion figure here, which is clearly something that you would see in, what's it called? The cave art in France.
Right.
And it's, yeah, so this is, again, this is something that you would see on a cave, but it's come to life. And it also, Maddie, if I recall, doesn't have a three-dimensional quality to it?
Yes, a lot of the paintings, if you look at them from the side, you can see where the paint has been built up, which is a hallmark of neo-expressionism.
So there's layers of depth, and it seems like it would have taken many times of going back to the canvas after this other layer dries to add some more to it. So maybe in the studio, when you saw it, Charlie, there would have been paintings hanging around that weren't finished that she might have been working on.
Yeah, you know, make no mistake, Katie's lifestyle was as unconventional as her art. So the idea of her doing any kind of art at 10 a.m. was anathema, right? That was, that would be you know, a violation.
Right.
The possibility of her doing work at 4 p.m., it's possible, but mostly her work was done between midnight and 5 a.m. You know, I mean, that's the way she rolled. So she did most of her painting, you know, maybe 10 o'clock, 10 p.m.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she'd start at 10 and, or maybe she'd start at midnight, but she spent a lot of nocturnal hours. So that was not sunlight.
Right.
She was not a creature of the sun.
Right. And you can see that in the work and most of it. Some of it is pretty sunny there towards the end of the book. The things that you see are daytime, outdoors.
A lot of her earlier work does feature plants and scenes of gardens outside.
Yeah.
And
then,
yeah, it does just seem like she kind of shut herself in her apartment and started painting some darker things in New York.
Maddie, why don't you talk about this thematic?
Yeah, it's interesting. In quite a few of the works, you'll find this prayer motif. You'll even find praying hands hidden throughout a lot of the works in the background. And I don't know what caused her to delve into this topic, but it seems like she had some sort of spiritual awakening while she was in New York that made her heavily rely on this theme throughout her work. Charlie, do you know
why? No, I can't speak to that. Okay. But for instance, if you take a look at this, this is archetypal of this theme. We call it kneeling devotion.
Right.
And again, it's archetypal of the theme. So here's another example of it. And so there's this series of basically devotion, prayer, praying hands, submission. Right. I mean, this is right, a submission of sorts to a greater power. What were you?
Matt? Oh, I would just add, even their nun figures and maybe priests, I'm not quite sure, but yeah, there was something going on.
Did you find any, in your, of your research, did you find anything where she had written about the work at all?
No, not much of anything. So I really had to rely on her friends and contemporaries from that time period when she was working. There is a brief passage that mentions her love of symbols in Italian, speaking about the gallery exhibit she did there.
But yeah,
that's the extent of what we know.
I can speak to that. Katie wrote a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, normally she would be writing at, you know, again, 3 a.m. So she did write a lot. I do not. I've got access to some of her writing, but a fraction. So one of them, I mean, I can speculate, but all of her writing, of which there's voluminous writing that she did, is not in my possession. So, but she did. She would write down her dreams and she would write down her thoughts. And so that was definitely, she wrote down her dreams a lot, which, you know, would you, can you be surprised? If you,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are like visual
dreams.
Yeah. So one thing that this last thing we're just talking about makes me think of a little bit is just the, you know, how I first met you, Charlie, was that as a writer. And this is a creativity that your family and Maddie included share, not only as people who make things happen yourself, but also supporting it in our community and being somebody who's bringing this to our city, more directly maybe than you have in the past, you know, so you, like, for instance, you've been involved with the IMA in Newfields for a long time. But in this case, you're right on the front line working on the exhibit with Maddie. So how does this feel for you and as a person who's been involved in the arts through your family and personally for so long?
And what I should say is, Jim, I've really enjoyed this and this has been fun and I enjoy front running and blah, blah, blah. but that would not be the case at all. I'm a shadow player. I like being in the shadows. So I am a big fan of the Harrison Center.
Mm-hmm.
And this could not have happened without the assistance of Joanna Taft, who's really, really been very helpful. And and Joanna has been part of the team from afar from the very beginning. And so I'm happy to be able to assist the Harrison Center, even as they have really hosted us.
Yeah.
And then our co-curator, Maddie, is...
Kyle Ragsdale.
Right. So he's going to help us put the whole thing together and hang it and whatnot.
So did we... is there anything else about this story...
Yes.
That you want to share as we wrap up?
Yes. I just came up with a good idea. It's not the first time. It's not the first time. But now that I have a captive audience, I think the Katie Sutphin retrospective could bring some of its show to the august halls of the Tube Factory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. There's... we're hanging on First Friday, September 1st, I don't know, a little over a half, let's just say, a little over a half of her work, but there's a number of Katie's works that we're holding back, and we do plan on showing them later on, some of the works will be around, and maybe, I don't know, oh my God, as soon as I said that, I'm looking at, and Maddie's thinking the same thing I am, which is, oh my God. You can't be serious. We're not going to do this again, are we, Mr. Sutphin?
Take a little break, and then we can do it in a little while.
I know.
I think that this is, for me, it's very exciting to see you guys bringing this to our community, and it's so important to think about family in this way and to not just let these things sit in the basement, because... She was making this work to share with people and to share with, and for you to be able to do that, that's a really important accomplishment.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, that is something that's interesting, which is sometimes artists do work to do work,
mm-hmm.
right? And, not all artists do work because they give a flying fig about other people.
Yeah.
And I think Katie, especially on that early, very creative part, didn't care if people liked it, saw it, bought it, owned it, whatnot. I think she was, she was doing it because it's what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
And, gee whiz. So, that's interesting, right? I guess the idea is that maybe, quote unquote, true artists, they do their art because it's what they do, not because they care what other people think.
Yeah. And they still, it's kind of like a window, though. They still want the window to be open so that people can see, what they don't want it to be in the basement. Oh, forever.
One never knows, right? One never knows.
Well, so to recap this a little bit, you can go to see the retrospective on September the 1st.
And for 30 days
after. For 30 days after. Mm-hmm. Do you have plans to have any way that people can access these books they're working on too?
Yes.
Yes.
So
Juried show.
Yeah. There's a blog entry coming out on the 1st that will accompany the show listing. These exhibition catalogs will be available at the show opening for free. And then we will also have an accompanying juried show right outside of the Harrison Gallery that features 35 local artists and their work, sponsored by the Katie Suffin Foundation.
And that is the same period of time from September 1st through that whole month.
Yes.
But the winners will be announced, it turns out, I think at 7 p.m. on September 1st.
Awesome.
And I think the prize, is it prize money? Can you say? I mean, I don't know what the right words are anymore, right?
Yeah.
Is around, what, $5,000, $6,000?
Yeah, and yeah, so there were 35 artists included in this.
And there'll be a first, second, third. And it's the first inaugural Catherine B. Suffin juried show. And I'm hopeful that it'll be the first of dozens, right?
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that every year in September we will have a juried show sponsored by the Catherine B. Suffin Foundation.
Okay, well, this has been very informative, and I'm really appreciate your time sharing about this, and we will definitely be. I'm excited to see it and experience this work. And,
free wine,
right?
And it's good. It's good. The wine is of a higher quality than normal.
Good.
And food.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be a whiz bang of a time. Everybody should come. You're gonna have fun. And there, you know, all the other Harrison artists will be having their studios open, and there'll be exhibitions in all the other galleries. It's just that this will be the showstopper.
Okay. Well, thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Maddie.
Yes, thank you.